Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening. Six things better than wealth in our study in Ecclesiastes. We recently considered sincerity or irreverence, the contrast in worship, poverty and riches, the futility of life. Our last study, we considered a common evil that Solomon saw, and it was the idea that a man can have many things, but if God doesn't give him the factor to be able to enjoy them, what's the point? What's the point? He said this man may have children to inherit his wealth. He may be given a long life, but yet when he dies, he may not even have anybody to bury him. What's the point? What's the point? He suggests that a stillborn child is better than one who labors and gains it for naught. The stillborn child never saw the light of day, never knew the pain and the heartache of this world. And he says that's better than the man that works so hard, doesn't enjoy any of it. What was the point? He has no peace, his labors are misguided, and he's living under the sun. Solomon has a fatalistic view of life that he adopts where, what's the point? God has preordained everything, whatever is going to be has already been established. You're not going to change it. There is truth that God does know what the future is. There is truth that God can ordain events to happen, but he does give us a free will. And he does work in our lives, and sometimes we can be our own worst enemy. Let us never adopt, well, just what shall be. If you do right, you will reap good. If you do wrong, you will reap accordingly. And so it does matter how we live our lives and how we see life. He then concludes with a who can know it? Who can even know what life is? You just don't know. Well, with God, you can. You can be blessed and you can know and have peace. One of the key statements early on in this book of Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes 1:9, the thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. That which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. That's not a fatalistic view. He's simply pointing out that mankind tends to repeat the same problems because people are people. Sin is sin. Desires are desires. Needs are needs. There is nothing new under the sun, so we can read this book several thousand years later and still be blessed by it. And satisfaction in life can only be found in a walk with God. We have come to a turning point in this book where it is not so much doom and gloom and despair and vanity and vexation of spirit, because it can be vanity and vexation of spirit just reading those first six chapters. But it's reality of life. He is starting to move on. I have a simple three-point outline of this book. Others have not done it this simply. They've changed it, but I am setting forth Ecclesiastes 1, 1 through 11, life without God is meaningless. In essence, Solomon sets forth the premise, and then he talks about his efforts, what he did to find truth and fulfillment in chapters 1, verse 12, through chapter 6, to the end thereof. And then, in chapter 7, to the end of the book, through chapter 12, he's talking about conclusions, that life doesn't have to be doom and despair. Over the next few messages in this third part of Solomon in Ecclesiastes, we're going to be seeing advice concerning wisdom and the virtues therein. Well, tonight we're going to be considering six things better than wealth. We're going to be looking at verses 1 through 9. Let us read. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the laying will live it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for the sadness and countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as crackling of the thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Well, this is a pretty simple, straightforward outline of these verses as we consider six things better than wealth. In chapter 7, verse 1, a good name is better. In verse 2, mourning is better. Verses 3 and 4, sorrow is better. Verses 5 through 7, rebuke is better. 8 and 9, the end of the matter and patience are better. So it is, we have six things here that are better than wealth. Remember, as we consider the flow of this passage, we have to tie it in with what went before. He has already talked in times past about poverty, the vanity thereof, wealth. But he, in the last chapters, made a point, I see an evil that's common. And he addressed it, but that theme is coming through in chapter 7. He sees this great evil that is common among people. If you have wealth and you have things, but God doesn't give you the blessing to be able to enjoy the fruit of your labor and the things that you have. And so it is this man lays up vanity and vexation as he just sees things, but he has no ability to enjoy them. A key to this is, in that last passage, as we talk about this man who's got great wealth, but he can't enjoy it, he thought he, when he worked hard, and if he had all these things, life would be wonderful. But that's not true. There are some pretty simple people in this world that truly are happy and very content. This man, even though he could have 2,000 years, remember? And 100 children, he still wouldn't be happy. If God doesn't give you the ability to enjoy it, what's the point? And this man may not even have anyone to bury him when he's dead. Now, there's something here that's kind of obvious, but you kind of have to state it to understand it. The vast majority of this world has not been tainted by being filthy rich. Now, we are very wealthy compared to the world, but there are a lot of people out there that are absolutely in abject poverty. The rich man has already experienced it, and he says, you know what? It's not what you think it is. But the poor man, in all of his problems, tends to think, boy, if I only had a little more money, just more. And they would tend to envy. And yet the truth is, Solomon says, if God's not in it, don't waste your time. Some people will be wealthy and some people God will bless, but most will not. They won't know how to handle their success. Therefore, our passage encourages better ways to solve life's problems than with wealth. Six things. The first one, chapter 7, verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth, of one's birth. Now here he is talking, a good name is better. It's better than an ointment. Therefore men ought to seek a good name rather than wealth. Let me quote, his object now is to place before us a man who does not aim at great affluence, but guided by prudence and common sense, makes it his ruling aim to stand well with his neighbors, and to lay by a moderate provision for future wants. The preacher opens the discussion by stating the maxim or rules of conduct by which such a one would be apt to guide himself. One of his first aims would be to secure a good name, since that would prepossess men in his favor, and open before him many avenues which would otherwise be closed. Just as one entering a crowded oriental room with some choice fragrance, exhaling from person and apparel, would find bright faces turned towards him, and a ready way is opened for his approach. So the bearer of a good name would find many willing to meet him, and traffic with him, and heed him, As the years passed, his good name, if he kept it, would diffuse itself over a wider area with a more pungent effect, so that the day of his death would be better than the day of one's birth, to leave a good name being so much more honorable than to inherit one. You can inherit a name, but can you live up to it? One of the things that we're going to see in all of these attributes is they're accessible to every human being. Money, you may work for and never achieve it. But if you truly apply yourself to these better virtues, you can achieve it. It's possible for everyone. Therefore, it's really possible when you think and define wealth properly, everybody can be wealthy when they have a walk with God. Consider the end of chapter 6, verse 12. For who knoweth what is good for man in this life? All the days of his vain life, which he spends as a shadow. For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? Verse 1 of chapter 7, a good name is better. Remember to take out those chapter verse divisions many times, because they will break a thought. We don't want to break that thought. So it is that Solomon, a man who has experienced a filthy rich life, is saying it is better to have a good name than to die a wealthy and frustrated old man who lives under the sun. There's something interesting, too, as we consider this. I do believe that the virtues here all are to be had, but they also all build and point to a good name. So let us continue on here. Our second better than is mourning. Chapter 7, verse 2, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. This is better than wealth because it makes men think of their death. And being able to think about your death is surely better than wealth, which is going to perish and you're going to leave it all behind. It is better to go to the house of mourning. Go back to chapter 7, verse 1. A good name is better than a precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. So we have a reference to your death in chapter 7, verse 1, and a reference to the house of mourning, grieving, a second reference. There is a solemn demeanor that separates a wise man from fools. His contemplations of death adjust his thinking to that which matters. Death is the end of life to everyone, and wealth cannot prevent it. Thus, it is better to dwell on and prepare for the certainty of death rather than the uncertainty and vanity of wealth. So when our mind is made up to truly remember daily, one day we will not be here, and we live the life to fullest, what God has given to us, we will have a different demeanor than the one who is not thinking about death. They go to the house of feasting, which gives a temporary relief at best. Solomon is calling men to consider their impending death. It may be years away, but it's sure, and men tend to neglect to think about their eternity. They would rather seek a life of fulfilling feasting while ignoring the house of mourning. And feasting leads to a life of folly. And it's not even so much that feasting leads to folly, it's the neglect to face reality. When we don't turn our face to the reality of this life, we are being very foolish. In the first six chapters of Ecclesiastes, Solomon tried many things to find fulfillment and satisfaction. He succeeded in accomplishing things, and he found that in his accomplishments, there was not satisfaction, but rather vanity and vexation. But he did notice this in all that he did. It's better to think about the day you die and you enter eternity. It says that one's death is better than his birth. How can this be? It can be if a man has pursued a good name. That's how it can be. Under the sun, one sees birth as the advent of a life of futility. What's the point? This baby, what is the first sound that a baby makes? Crying. To the life under the sun, it's a foreshadowing of a life of frustration. And that is the doom and gloom that the world faces. But above the sun, oh folks, life can be such a blessing. And the baby that makes its first sound of crying is finally set free by death. And in a way, there is a relief if they truly ignore the eternal and God and judgment and heaven and hell. They think they go back to dust. I guess you are set free. But that's not reality. They aren't really set free. They're not really better off for having ignored the Lord and their struggle from sin. They would love to come back and put up with the headaches of this world and endure the flames of hell forever. But with God, your day of death is better when you have walked with the Lord. One day the faith will become sight. Paul addressed this very issue in Philippians 1:23, "For I, Paul, am in a strait betwixt two. I have a desire to depart to be with Christ, which is far better." He wanted to die and be with the Lord, but he also wanted to stay behind, if you read that in context, and bless other people. I want to serve. I want to keep going. But I want to be with the Lord too. To the believer, death, physical death, is the beginning of life. Got it? To the Christian, physical death is the beginning of life. Don't ever forget that. Let me quote, "The day of a saint's death is better than the whole of his days put together, because his days here are days of dying. The moment we begin to live, we commence to die. Death is the end of dying. On the day of the believer's death, dying is forever done with. This life of failure, disappointment, regret, such emotions are all over when the day of death comes. For glory dawns upon us with its satisfaction and intense content. The day of our death will be the day of our cure. There are some diseases which, in all probability, some of us never will get rid of till the last physician comes, and he will settle the matter. One gentle touch with his hand, and we shall be cured forever. Our death day will be the loss of all losses. Life is made up of losses, but death loses losses." Yes, I had to practice this. "Life is full of crosses, but death is the cross that brings crosses to an end. Death is the last enemy, and turns out to be the death of every enemy. The day of our death is the beginning of our best days. Is this to die?" said one. "Well then," he said, "it is worthwhile to live even to enjoy the bliss of dying. The holy calm of some and the transport of others prove that better is the day of death in their case than the day of birth or all their days on earth." Although Solomon spoke much from despair, there's much truth that the believer can have death as a better thing. Death delivers the unsaved from the troubles of this world only to deliver them to the far worse terrors of the eternal hell. Thus, considering death brings a good name. Everything's going to point back. If you think about mourning, if you think about the day of death, it's going to make you a better man because you're going to be dealing with reality in life. Third, sorrow. Ecclesiastes 7:3, "Sorrow is better than laughter. For by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth." Sorrow is another way a man can secure a good name. This does not mean that we cannot enjoy life, because that was the whole point of Solomon in the last chapter. If God doesn't give you the ability to enjoy life, what's the point? But God does give people the ability to enjoy life. But along the way, the reason why we can enjoy it is because we have our head screwed on straight. This world's all going to pass away, and only what we did for Christ will last. And whether the world wants to embrace Christianity, reject and condemn it, or whatever, they cannot deny that the virtues found in Christianity are truly wonderful things. They're convicted by a Christian's virtues. Sorrow is better than laughter. Do you remember? This is one of the things that Solomon tried to find happiness, Ecclesiastes 2:1. I said in my heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. I'm going to find happiness in mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it's mad. And of mirth, what doeth it? Now he has come past those days, and he's into chapter 7, starting to move on. Let's start to look at a little bit brighter side of life. And he is starting to tell us, advising us, if you will, towards wisdom. Solomon sees in chapter 2, when he talks about mirth, that it is vanity. And God designed life to work only one way, and that is with him. Everything else is designed to fail, and so even if you succeed at these endless, worthless, empty endeavors, the truth is, when time is no more, you'll be glad you found your relationship in God. They drove you back to God. This didn't work. This didn't work. All right, I'll try this. Because if we could truly find satisfaction at the end of an empty road, we'd stay there. And God says, no, you're going to be exercised by it. Keep looking. Sorrow here is likened to vexation in life. Ecclesiastes 3:9, remember, what profit hath he who worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I've seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised by it. All of this frustration, travail, what's the point? It's to exercise you. Keep looking. Keep looking. Therefore, sorrow brings sadness as expected, since it's apart from God. It drives one to the house of mourning, to death. Your sorrow in this life is going to keep driving you to God in the reality of life. Oh, God. Oh, dear God. And the older we get, the more we start to count our days. Therein, sorrow gives a good name because it drives us back to the things that matter. Fourth, rebuke. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This is also vanity. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. A rebuke develops a good name, because if it is coming from a wise man to correct someone who is truly seeking truth and they listen, they'll be better off. They'll get a good name. This is why it's better to get rebuke. Tell me what I'm doing wrong so I can do better. Did you ever play a musical instrument and take lessons? And the instructors, okay, that's don't do that. Do this. And they're not doing it because they don't like you. You're paying them to tell you what not to do. And when you find it, you keep doing it. The right things. So it is, the rebuke from a wise man can at first pinch. But if you listen to it and you let it have its perfect work in your life, you'll be a better person. It's better than wealth. Because it changes you, your character, your outlook on life, the deeds you're doing, so when you stand before God, you can have a good report. It may not be pleasant, but if you accept it, it was worth it all. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for man to hear the song of fools. How many times have people in this world, I just want to turn on some tunes and just get lost in this, right? And just kind of bury myself in the music and not deal with the things of life. Proverbs 25:20, as he that taketh away a garment in cold weather, and as vinegar upon nitre, so is he that sings songs to a heavy heart. So the fool is out there singing to other fools, but the wise man is saying, you know what? I don't need this. And he gets some correction, and that is more meaningful than sitting there listening to tunes. Singing in this case doesn't help the person. It may bring a few moments of relief, but it's over and the problems are still there. Laughter is no more than the burning of sticks in a fire. You can all visualize them cracking and popping. They make a sound, they get your attention, and they're gone. That's what it's like outside of the Lord. We need rather a rebuke sometimes than we do to have someone sing to us. Solomon sees the positive role and the purpose of suffering and rebuke, and they lead us to a better life. Therefore, it is better to get a rebuke than it is to get wealth. The end. It is better as the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. And the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. The end of the matter allows you to look back and see clearly all once that was a puzzle. And we walked by faith, but how many times have we heard Christians, as they look back on their life, they see the hand of God. At that moment, it seemed to be a confusion and okay, but as you take one step and the years pass and another, and you look back and you say, I see God was there all the time. And in that respect, the end is much better. It allows us to see the hand of God and where He has been with us, and He will therefore still be with us. This man sees trials and tribulations and how God was in them all. And therefore he checks himself again along life's checkpoints. Okay, let's review that. Let's end here and let's think about this. Where was God? Where did I blow it? Where did I do right? How can I improve? The end. Now that I can fully see, you go through a trial and it's all done and you start to reflect on it. It's better because now you can look back and learn from it. You learn faith along the way, but you can also reflect and say, okay, I shouldn't have done that, and I shouldn't have done that. It is wise that we would search ourselves. We can say the end of the quest for a good name is better than wealth. The end of mourning is better because it secured a good name. The end of sorrow is better because it secured a good name. The end of rebuke is better, for it secured a good name. And this end is linked to the patient spirit. Verse 8, better is the end of a thing than the beginning, and he links right into it, and patient in spirit is better than proud in spirit. A patient spirit is better than wealth because it enables a man to continue through vanity and vexation until he finds satisfaction and purpose in life. Keep going. That patient spirit enables a man to maintain his good name. His patience prevents him from hasty actions and words in the midst of the vexation of life. Consider the next verse, verse 9. Well, let's read into it. And the patient in spirit is better than a proud spirit. Why, as a matter of fact, you ought to practice your patience and be not hasty in spirit to be angry, because anger rests in the bosom of fools. So you have the end of a matter. And he says, now that you've heard the end, maybe it even be referring to the rebuke you got. Boy, am I glad that's over with. And he's saying, just be patient. Heed the words that were said. It's over. Learn from them. Don't be angry at the person who gave you the rebuke. Stop and think it was for your good. Don't say something you wish you hadn't have said. And your patient spirit lets you endure the words that came out and confronted you, and you say, you're right. I'm glad I wasn't hasty in words. I'm glad I didn't just say what was on my mind. In these few verses, Solomon has warned against fools, Ecclesiastes 7:4. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. At the end of verse 5, the song of fools. In verse 6 in the middle, the laughter of the fool. So it is, he is comparing, if you are not seeking a good name and the virtues therein, you're being very foolish. You're being very foolish. You need to heed these admonitions. Solomon is saying after 6 chapters, been there, done that, been there, done that, been there, done that, been there, done that, been there, done that. It's all folly, folks. It's vanity and vexation of spirit. Don't waste your time. Don't be a fool. Don't run with fools. He is speaking from the vantage point of one who has great wealth. And he is crying out, I had money. I was filthy rich. Gold unspeakable. It didn't satisfy. Don't waste your time. Everything we have considered tonight in a good name, mourning, sorrow, rebuke, end, and the end of an issue and a patient spirit, all can be had by every person. Therefore, we can all be extremely wealthy beyond wealth because those are better than earthly riches. And we can take that virtue and share it with other people in many different ways. And when we're in heaven, we'll be glad, so glad we didn't waste our time on folly and foolishness.
This is Pastor Rod Hollard. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.